This is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
So this week we're doing Submarine.
Yes.
The Richard Ayoade film.
Adeoa film. It's very rare.
Ayoade.
I correct you on the pronunciation of a name.
What is it again?
Adeoa.
Adeoa.
Come on.
It's said now like it's written, I tell you.
We should have really cleared this all up before we started, really.
No, it's all part of the fun.
Okay. So, yeah, we're a very modern film, 2010.
I know, we've come right bang up to date.
Yeah, just 2 years old, or not even 2 years, about a year and a half old.
That is basically up to date for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, Submarine, it's an interesting one. The kind of, there's a little bit of a story behind this. You watched it a while back, didn't you?
I saw it when it came out, being the kind of finger on the pulse young hipster that I am. I just heard, you know, this little film's coming out, supposed to be good. I was like, yeah, I'll check it out. So I headed down to the cinema, you know, my usual art house cinema. And
were you wearing your roll neck black jumper and black jumper, beret, sunglasses, even though it's raining?
And indoors and in the cinema, it's terrible, really. And a book of French poetry and philosophy just in my pocket. And I'd heard this very good. I'm a big fan of Richie Adeoa anyway, from his acting work and his work with both... who's the guy? Matt...
Matt Berry.
Matt Berry. No, not Matt Berry. The guy who plays Garth Marenghi.
I can only think of his name. Rick Douglas in the actual... No, that's Matt Berry. Oh, I'm confused now.
Anyway, so from...
It'll come to me. It'll come to me.
From that, and also his work in It Crowd or the IT Crowd, depending on what you say. What do you call it? The It Crowd?
I call it the IT Crowd.
I call it the IT Crowd as well, but I think Graham Linehan calls it the It Crowd. But, anyway. So, big fan of that. So I checked it out, and I just really enjoyed it. It's a good little film, and I think it's one of those films that... I saw it, I was like, yeah, it's not bad. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, actually, that was very good. That was a really decent little film. And then fast forward to January. Was it January or February? Early February to 2012. Cut to Lewis.
Yep. So our friend Amy organised the trip to go and see the film at the screening in Shoreditch, I think it was.
On the outskirts of Shoreditch.
Yeah, so there's this great little thing called the Underground Picture House. You should look it up online. They're very good. Mm. And they screen lots of kind of art house films. And yeah, we went to see it in a very cold basement of a pub.
It? Yeah, it was the Water Poet, which is quite a good pub, but the basement was just ice cold,
I know,
wasn't it?
Oh. And stank of disinfectant.
Yeah, it was quite a bizarre set of circumstances to see the film in. Just this overwhelming smell of disinfectant coupled with, like, yeah, icy cold. It really was. It's like there was a ghost watching it with us.
So, not the ideal circumstances, but I'm pleased to say the film warmed us up.
Yeah, and in a funny way, both disinfectant and a very cold temperature somehow suit the kind of feel of the film, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, the film's set in winter, so, immediately we were right there with the film.
And it's set in 1986, sort of in Wales, and I don't know, that to me smacks of disinfectant.
It's vaguely racist.
No, not at all. I don't know, you just, it was a lot of it set in school.
Well, I was going to say, the school thing.
Hospitals as well. Yeah, so there was a disinfectant air to the film. I'm sure Richie Adeoa would be quite proud of that.
It was a good film. I was impressed.
Yeah, to summarise, yeah, we've kind of danced around the plot. What would you say the pitch is? Should I pitch this?
Yeah, all right.
Okay, sensitive teenage boy... falls in and out and in love.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 1986 Swansea.
In 1986 Swansea. Beautiful Swansea.
Well, the countryside is beautiful, isn't it, in the film? But, and broad plot is that there's a young guy called Oliver Tate, played by Craig Roberts. Have you seen him in anything before?
No.
He was in an episode of Being Human, the BBC TV show. A while back, and he was very good in that. Actually, sort of played a vampire teenager, a slightly awkward vampire teenager, and he was very good in that. And he really impressed in this. And Oliver Tate is, to say he's an unusual teenager, that's probably the wrong way. He's, I suppose, just an intelligent, sensitive teenage boy.
Yeah.
Who overthinks things.
Yeah.
has a slightly inflated sense of his own importance, as we all do at that age. Mm-hmm. And
he's kind of an in-betweener, I guess, as made famous by the Channel 4 TV show.
Yeah, we're mentioning lots of TV shows today.
Yeah, he's bullied, but also bullies in turn.
Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of a mid-range in the pecking order at school.
Yeah, 15 years old. He's kind of growing away from his friends who he's spent time with. I suppose kind of working out who he is. And the film sort of follows him falling in love and having a relationship with Jordana. Is it Jordan? Yeah, it's Jordana.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's all presented from his point of view. I think, interestingly, the book it's based on, the entire book is written from his point of view. So you kind of, you're left to infer what actually happens.
Yeah, you do sometimes read between the lines, or suppose see between the lines on the film, exactly what the situation is. His interpretation of events can be quite different. Yeah, and it's also told in almost like a French art house film, isn't it? That's the other.
Yeah, there's lots of film references. I've got to say, I didn't get all of them. But
no, I think those who listen to 101 films a lot realise that our actual knowledge of film is pretty pretty poor on the whole. So we're not going to pick up all the references. But lots of little things like title cards for different sections of the film.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it starts off at introduction or prologue, and then falling in love and death. And
it reminded me a lot of kind of Wes Anderson films.
Mm, yeah, there definitely was an influence from Wes Anderson. Yeah, quirky characters, the parents especially.
Yeah,
they could have stepped straight out for Wes Anderson.
It could have been the Royal Tenenbaums or something.
Yeah, yeah, but I would say though it has a slightly more realistic edge to it.
Yeah, yes.
Than Wes Anderson films. Yeah. By the way, examples of Wes Anderson films are The Life Aquatic, The Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore, which we've not seen, which is on our list.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing that one. The Darjeeling Limited as
yeah,
well.
I've not seen that.
Great soundtrack. One of the best soundtracks
yeah,
ever.
Yeah, everyone says
I
that.
I love
though.
The soundtrack.
Well, he's very good with his soundtracks, isn't he? With the Portuguese David Bowie covers on The Life Aquatic. But anyway, we digress. Yeah, so it has definitely a kind of, it's definitely more realistic. Mm. It feels more grounded in the real world. Even though these characters are quite unusual and quirky, they're not beyond the realms of possibility at all.
No, definitely, yeah. Should we talk about the cast a bit? Who else is in it? Noah Taylor. He was a very good. Noah Taylor's the plays the dad.
Yeah, he's my favourite. Yeah, I'll talk more about him for the stand-up performances, but he's fantastic.
Yeah, very, very good.
Yeah, he's really, really funny.
Paddy Considine, he plays the slightly odd next-door neighbour.
Well, he sort of plays the kind of the only kind of adult, really, to have really be pretentious in the entire film.
Whereas, I suppose so. He's kind of like just portrayed as like some sort of spiritual ninja sex man.
Who, of course, in 1986 Wales comes across as very exotic. He has a van with a sort of a mystic mirror on the side. And in the back he's got like fairy lights and massage oils and things like that.
Yeah.
It's that kind of, yeah.
And Yasmin Page plays Jordana. She was really good, I thought.
Yeah, and I watched an interview with them on YouTube. And what was really interesting, bizarrely, Craig Roberts, who plays Oliver, looks way younger.
Oh, right.
Yeah, than he did in the film, even though he was playing 15. In this interview, he looked really boyish and young.
Okay.
And Yasmin Page looked much older. She looked like she was like 19, 20.
Really?
Yeah, she had like long curly hair. That made the difference, I think.
Oh, okay.
So she looked very different. But yeah, it really made me laugh how young Craig looked. Despite the way he plays a 15-year-old. I mean, he's obviously much older than that, but he looks he looked really young in the interview. But she's great in that. She plays the part perfectly. She kind of, I suppose, she's... How would you describe her, Lewis?
I love the way you just...
Because I can't think of a way to describe her.
She's a bit like a porcelain doll in many ways. She rarely cracks a smile, but when she does...
Yeah, I suppose she's mysterious, isn't she? And she has a sort of... how would you describe it? A slightly crazy edge to her.
Yeah.
You know, but not in a kooky, oh, man, more in a slightly dark, knowing way. Yeah.
She's a bit of a pyromaniac as well.
Yeah, pyromaniac, like, likes bullying people. she has a dark streak to her, which Oliver finds very attractive.
It's always the way, isn't it? The bad girls.
Yeah, bad girls. Yeah, you can't help but love a bad girl.
And lastly, Sally Hawkins plays Jill Tate, the mother.
Yeah,
she was great as well.
Yeah, she just is a. It's a perfect performance of repression and awkwardness.
One of the reviews I read described her as like a Thunderbird puppet, which yeah. I thought was quite
apt.
Yeah,
very true. She, yeah, very, usually it's a terrible thing to describe a performance as wooden, but I mean that in the positive sense here. It yeah. just very, yeah, she, her, no, she doesn't move much at all, does she?
Yeah.
All her moves seem very, very controlled.
It's brilliant. Like every movement or speech is just an effort for her. You know? It's great.
You often see them, sort of, what you know, the parents are sitting watching TV, and they're just sitting stock still, not moving at all, in very unnatural poses as well.
Okay, shall we talk? Should we do the trivia quiz?
Oh, okay. We'll get the trivia.
Yay!
On the way.
Trivia.
Trivia.
Trivia. I love the trivia quiz.
I still haven't got round to listening to it. And there's more every day and not listening to the podcast.
So we don't know who's winning.
No, we've got to do it, though. It's.
I think I'm
perhaps
winning.
We should take
I'm fairly sure I'm winning.
I suspect not. I think you were, at the beginning. I think you did
after podcast one.
So, no, I'm sure you pulled ahead. I think the first couple you did really well on, and I did better. And then I had a run of good ones where I won.
Okay. Well, let's just say I'm winning. Okay, moving on.
Well, I was going to say, let's just call it a draw.
Okay.
Should I go first?
Yeah, you go first. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So, the film is actually produced by Ben Stiller.
Ooh.
America's Ben Stiller. And he has a very small cameo appearance in it. Where is the cameo appearance?
Oh, I think I know this. I think he appears in a sitcom that someone's watching on TV, I think.
Okay, all right. The film was released to some acclaim in the Sundance Festival over in America. Yeah. There was a difference between the American edition and the UK edition, though. Can you tell me what that difference was?
Oh, my Lord. I don't know. Did they subtitle it in American?
Yeah. Howdy, partner. Give me a cheeseburger, that kind of thing.
I don't know. They must have changed the title. I'm guessing they changed the title, but I don't know what to.
Okay. And what does the director, Reggie Adeoa, and me have in common?
What do you have in common?
We have one big major thing in
common. You have a Norwegian mother and a Nigerian father?
I'll give you a clue. It is to do with circumstances of our birth.
Oh, okay. Do you share a birthday?
Okay. Right.
Okay. Right. Okay. Okay. First question: what's the link between Jordana and Doctor Who?
Oh. Well, she's Welsh. Doctor Who's filmed in Wales.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to say that perhaps she had her break on a episode of Doctor Who that was filmed in Wales.
Okay. Next question. Which Tim Burton film did Noah Taylor appear in?
Ooh. Is it Sleepy Hollow?
Okay, and last question. I'm looking forward to this one. Name five submarine films.
Okay. Right, okay. Das Boot.
Okay, that's one.
That's one. Five, that's a lot. Okay, Yellow Submarine.
Yep.
That's two. The Hunt for Red October.
That's three.
That's three. Uh, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Oh, yeah, good one. That's four.
And
gonna have to hurry you.
You for someone, what it was called. The,
oh, I'm gonna I need the exact answer.
The exact song. Okay. All right. If not that, do TV movies count? Because I was going to say Sequest, the TV movie.
No, you can't have Sequest DSV, okay. No.
Okay. And one more.
You were close with that number.
Yeah, I think it is. Is it U5471?
No.
It's not only do you require five. All right, is there another one? Submarines. Oh,
10, 9, 8, 7, 4, 3, 2.
I'm going to say, yeah, I have to say, I don't know.
I don't know. Okay.
I'll give you the answers. I'm afraid, Lewis, you did very badly. Ben Stiller's cameo, I'll give you half point, it was actually in a soap opera, not a TV sitcom.
What soap opera was that?
It wasn't a real one.
Swansea Nights.
Swansea Nights, yeah. The difference between the UK and USA versions of the film is that the USA version has a opening voiceover by Oliver Tate just explaining what Wales is. And the director, Richard Adeoa, and myself were born in the same hospital.
Really?
Whips Cross Hospital.
Oh, not the zoo.
No.
Okay. What was the link between Jordana and Doctor Who? You were really close, but the actor Yasmin Page starred in the Sarah Jane Adventures.
The spin-off
of Doctor Who.
Yes, she did, yes. Now you've said that, yeah, I recognise her now, yeah.
What Tim Burton film did Noah Taylor appear in? Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, no, of course he was the dad of Charlie,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Right.
I picture him now. I could picture him in a Tim Burton film. But I, for some reason, I pictured him in period costume. I guess it's the greyness of the house. Or the
indiscriminate, well, not indeterminate period.
Yeah.
Name five films starring submarines. So what did you get? Das Boot, Hunt for Red October. What was the other one you said?
Yellow Submarine.
Yellow Submarine, Leagues Under the Sea. You could have had Submarine.
Submarine.
Don't! Other ones you could have had. K-19, The Widowmaker.
Oh, yeah.
Run Silent, Run Deep. Torpedo Run.
U-571. U-571.
I think
U-471.
You said 471.
And then I think I said U-5471.
Yeah.
For some reason I mentioned 471.
The Enemy Below is another one.
So you're not going to give me anything for that?
I'll give you half. I'll give you half.
You've got to go four.
I'll give you half. You could have had Crimson Tide is another one. And The Abyss.
Oh, The Abyss. Yeah. Oh, well. So that's half a point each.
That was a terrible round.
Let's move swiftly on. So I think let's start again. The film is set in 1986. Mm. And there is that feel of, like, 1980s Britain in the film. Nothing. It's not overt. It's not like The Wedding Singer. With people making references to very CDs or really 1980s things, or laughingly saying, making a prediction which we know is not going to come true, or I don't know, that Elton John's marriage is going to last forever with what's her name?
Was it Kiki D?
Yeah, Kiki D and that kind of thing. Yeah, there's nothing silly like that, but it just really has that kind of feel, especially setting school as well. I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I've got to say, it just left me feeling faintly depressed.
Like just, the '80s did.
Yeah, it just made me think, God, the '80s was rubbish. It's just like there were some nice things. Duffel coats was something I treasure from the '80s.
I like I don't know, there's something pleasing about the kind of retro technology. Tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah, handmade tapes.
I think the thing is just stuff that didn't work. That was the '80s for me. If you got a new bit of technology, there's a chance it just wouldn't work.
In fact, the only thing that they mention that's actually from the '80s. The only kind of direct link to the time it's set in is that at one point the parents every week go and see a film, which is quite an important plot point because it means the house is empty and Oliver can try and seduce Jordana. And as they sort of leave, they tend to see kind of art house films. So in a way, probably the sort of films that this. I wondered if actually the film they mentioned they're going to see. I wonder if that's kind of the same sort of, I don't know, the influence that that submarine's based on the French film that it's based on.
What was it? What film was it?
I can't remember, fortunately. But I remember thinking at the time I should have written it down. Anyway, so we were in a freezing basement in the dark watching the film. I didn't have my pen to hand. They sort of go off to the film, and then, of course, they get kind of dragged wayside by Paddy Constantine's character, Graham.
Graham,
is the mystic ninja guy, and they end up seeing Crocodile Dundee. And they sort of make a little reference. He goes, "Well, I enjoyed Crocodile Dundee.
I enjoyed Crocodile Dundee." And that was
it's a great film.
One good thing about the 80s, I think, was that there are some really great family films that came out of the 80s.
Yeah, it was a great decade. Yeah. But do you think we just say that because we ourselves had our childhood in the 80s? Close affection for things like The Goonies.
There's a definite affection because of that. But also, I think, you know, looking back at the 70s and 60s, some of the kids' movies came out of family films, I should say. Yeah, not all that
some
great.
Of those live-action Disney ones in the 70s God. And late 60s are awful.
Yeah, really bad. Disney just went for a terrible patch of making dismal movies.
Yeah, really, really poor. I saw, what was the one?
Escape to Witch Mountain is probably the most famous one.
I saw one that we watched the beginning the other day of one. One with a cartoon dragon in it.
Pete and the Dragon.
Yeah, saw a little bit of that. Yeah. I was like, oh dear, this is annoying kind of central kid character. we've talked about this before, but I think, you know, kids' films also had a sort of slightly harder edge in the 80s as well.
Yeah, people died.
People died, they had a bit of swearing.
Guns. Yeah.
Yeah.
None of this namby-pamby PC rubbish.
I don't really think it's PC, it's more the opposite, really. I imagine the various councils that insist in America that insist on certain standards of film wouldn't describe themselves as PC. Mm. They were saying the moral majority, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's the 80s.
Yeah,
the 80s.
We're definitely going to have to do a special at some point.
We will do
80s family films.
We might do perhaps children's 80s children's films.
Definitely.
Yeah. Defo. You heard it here first. The other kind of strong theme of it is adolescence, growing up, falling in love for the first time, and
yeah, I think although it is intentionally kind of art house and a bit weird, it really does capture that feeling of awkwardness and, you know, discovering yourself and not really sure what you're meant to be. You know,
it's great at having its cake and eating it, and by that I mean that yes, it has a slight pretension, a slight cleverness to it. But it's done from the perspective of a slightly pretentious, clever 15-year-old. Mm. So it has that feel on purpose.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, you it could so easily have become annoying. Mm-hmm. It could have become quirky for quirky's sake or pretentious for pretentious sake. But instead, it's clever, it's intelligent, and it's done in an interesting style. But it fits perfectly the character we're exploring. You know, we're exploring, you know, finding out more about Oliver Tate and the film. Show it's done from his perspective and it's done really well.
Exactly, and the key thing is that the characters are just so likable.
Yeah,
that you just forgive it. You know, you forgive any pretentiousness because actually you're genuinely interested in them and seeing what happens to them.
Yeah, no, I mean none of the characters come off particularly badly. By that they're all interesting. They're all fallible human beings. Mm. The only kind of real out and out villain is Graham, isn't he?
Yeah.
I suppose. Graham is sort of...
he's a manipulator,
isn't he? The plot that comes up is that he sort of... Oliver's parents are not getting on, their marriage is falling apart. This is kind of told in some very humorous ways with Oliver sort of depicting, you know, sort of keeps records of how many times they have sex and things like that.
routinely searches their bedroom.
On a routine search of my parents' bedroom, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He loves making lists and keeping track of everything. So... yeah, so you know their marriage is not, it's, for some reason, it's not quite right. They're both having sort of midlife crisis almost, aren't they?
Yeah.
His mum just about choices she made and the fact she's getting older, and his dad about just his job, and he's a marine biologist.
Yeah, he's a marine biologist with nowhere to go.
Yeah, didn't do well in Open University videos because
he didn't know what to do with his hands.
Yeah, very good. So Graham sort of comes up and is a love interest for the mother, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But even he, at the end, is shown to be a bit of a pathetic character.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. He's very shallow.
He's not shown as evil or anything like that. He's not setting out. He's just a bit of a dick.
So, what are your standout performances in the film?
I really like the dad. What's his name?
Noah Taylor.
He just nails that perfectly.
Yeah, I love him. Just his dressing gown is almost a character in itself.
Yeah,
I love that dressing gown.
I was one of my questions, but there was a thing about how each character's got a colour.
Oh yes.
So yeah. Jordana is red.
Yeah.
Oliver's blue. I think Graham is it black or purple?
He's black
because
yeah.
He mostly wears black clothes. The mother, Jill, she's kind of like yellow, kind of cream yellow. Mm. And the dad, Lloyd, is beige. And they do actually make reference to that. I guess because Graham is sort of sending some new age nonsense about the power of light and prisms and all that. And he goes, I give off light. We all give off light and colour. And sort of Oliver says, my dad gives off a kind of beige colour. Just a little picture of him with the wife and the kid and just just wearing beige clothes completely. But he just has this, in the film, the dad sort of has a sort of, well, it's alluded to that he has these rounds of depression that he kind of goes into, then struggles to get out of.
Yeah.
It's done in such a sort of sweet... He comes across as such a sweet man who... He means really well. He wants the best for both his wife and his son. But, like all of us sometimes, it just... We find, real world... The real world and real life a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
struggle to cope with.
Descends into kind of depression. I suppose that's where the submarine... Yeah. Comes from in the title, by the way.
Yeah, it's talking about the depression feels like you're underwater. Mm. And it's pressing down on you. But he's just so likable. Mm. And he has some of the funniest lines in the film as well.
Yeah. Not that I can think of any right now.
No, well, when they find out Oliver's got a girlfriend and he comes in and he goes, I've made you a tape.
Oh,
some love songs that really made me really made me happy when I was in love. And on the other side are some breakup songs for when it inevitably collapses. Because he's not that, well, no, he says it's not inevitable, but chances are these young relationships, they do end. So be prepared for that. There's another line where he says, we're trying to attract a woman. He goes, I once tore off a vest. And a woman found that quite stimulating.
Did he say he had a very atavistic effect?
That's it. He has another great little line where he just says, he goes, why did you become a marine biologist? He goes, I just sort of drifted into it. No pun intended. But it's just a delightful performance. Really is. It's just fantastic. Really, as I say, just such a likable guy. But they're all really good, actually.
Yeah, very great performance. Yeah, you really believe in all of the characters.
Yeah, they all have a certain weight to them, all of them. Mm. Yeah, none of them are really one note. Even Jordana, who starts off as very much just, and of course from one of the, like all of us, when we meet someone, we see them just from our perspective and nothing else. And we tend to invest our own sort of hopes and desires in that person. Mm-hmm. And now over time, you get to know them and you start to realise they have their own hopes and desires and their own interests and their own view of things. And yeah, initially Jordana's like that, but as kind of Oliver gets to know her more and she opens up more, we kind of find out more about her. And she isn't just this kind of pyromaniac girl with a slightly sly, knowing smile. She has, her own. She has her own issues and problems and worries, concerns. Yeah, no, really good. So, best bits. We've touched on a couple.
Yeah, best bits. I think my favourite bit of the film has to be the montage sequence. I never thought I'd hear myself saying these words. Usually not a big fan of montages. Lazy. Generally, well, but
the only one that springs to mind that's brilliant is in Team America, where they have the montage song.
This is gonna be a montage. Yeah. No, there's a sequence. I think they introduce it saying Oliver says it's our 2 weeks of lovemaking.
Mm.
Lovemaking here meaning actually kind of going out on dates and holding your hands.
Yeah.
And there's just this brilliant kind of series of beautiful kind of images of kind of industrial landscapes with them just kind of holding hands and burning each other's leg hair and just it is very, it's difficult to describe it in words, but it's a really, really lovely sequence. Well, and beautifully shot, beautifully shot.
Yeah, it's kind of a mixture. He actually says something like almost instant nostalgia because the filter used is that kind of
Super 8 kind
of film. Super 8 sort of film, and it's done, that's done in a very purposeful way. Yeah, it's a cliche used on purpose because Oliver's saying it's like instant nostalgia, these are memories that I'm going to have forever.
Yeah.
And so he's viewing them. So it's just lots of them kind of goofing around and wearing silly sunglasses and kissing and hugging and running around. And as you say, it's like all done in these kind of awful industrial states. But the way the shot, the light, the kind of slightly
grainy effect.
And yeah.
They look amazing. And it really, I was genuinely impressed with that sequence. So, yeah.
I think for me, just because it comes right at the beginning of the film, and you know, when I first saw it, I wasn't quite sure what to expect. And one of the earliest bits where he sort of talks about imagines if he died and how the impact it has. And that's really cool because all teenagers, I think, imagine what would happen if they died. And they go, then they'd show them because then everyone would be upset. And then all the things people said, yeah. So that's very dark, isn't it? They all imagine. But I think teenagers are obsessed with, because they're the centre of the world, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they imagine if they weren't there anymore, the impact would be so massive. And everyone would be sorry. Anyone who's ever said anything bad to you would be dreadfully sorry. And girls would sort of admit that they actually loved you all the time. They only wish they had a chance to say it. And it's just great. It's done from news reports. And
the outpouring of grief.
We are seeing unprecedented scenes here. And
just people holding candles, searching the school, holding hands.
Like a shrine appearing. And it just made me, and it just actually, you said it once, and I was like, oh, this is actually going to be really funny. Yeah. And it is funny, even though there are moments where it's not, and moments which are quite dark and quite sad and quite whimsical, I guess is very what good way of describing it. But that's just properly funny. It made me laugh so much. Because I was definitely guilty of that when I was younger, just going, and if I would die now. Of course, you don't realise when you're 15 that if you die, you don't get to see all the outpouring of grief. And about 6 months later, everyone would have forgotten you. So, certainly everyone in school, just occasionally you'd come up in conference and go, oh, do you remember? Oh, what was his name? Yeah, he died in the third year or something. Oh, a bit dark. Anyway, there you go.
Bad bits? Any bad bits?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say anything really doesn't work for me.
I think I suppose one thing that's slightly grated, I think the performance of Graham, I think, was a little bit over the top in the sense that perhaps it was almost too comical.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I think it generally hit all the right notes.
Yeah, I think so.
It grabbed me from the very beginning kept hold of me till the end.
It wasn't over long. It wasn't, in a way, I think if you were to give, say, we'd never do this, but say, put on the spot, what would you give a grade to this film? I don't know, would you give it A+ or A- or B+ or something like that? What would you sort of say if someone said?
Yeah, I'd definitely give it an A+. But I think
You would top wow. You say, I would say,
is there an A star above that?
No.
Is there an A+?
What I'm saying is that it's not the greatest film ever, but
perhaps an A then. Can I say A?
Yeah, but it just all works, doesn't it? Yeah. It's good. What I was trying to say, there are no obvious weak bits, but that's not to say it's the amazingly, it's the best film ever. It's just,
I can also,
it achieves everything it sets out to do.
I can see how some people wouldn't like it. If you're not a big fan of kind of quirky cinema films, then you might get irritated with it.
Okay, well, this comes back to my other point, which is I would say this is a future classic for sensitive teenage boys.
Definitely, yeah.
And I suspect that both me and you, Lewis, were sensitive teenage boys. Yeah. So,
well, we came out of the film and you said, what was it? I wish I'd seen that when I was 15.
Yeah, I mean, I would have absolutely loved it at 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, and and of course it gets the girl, which even I would have even more loved at 15.
Even geeky kids in duffel coats get the girls.
And that's certainly what I think. But then again, your girlfriend really liked it, didn't she?
Yeah, she bought it.
She shacked up to a sensitive teenage boy, essentially, isn't she?
Yeah. Maybe she's tainted. I've tainted her.
Music now.
I see you've written down here music hyphen ukulele challenge.
Yes, I have.
Because is this the long-awaited return of the ukulele challenge?
I'm going to do my best.
You know, we keep getting hits from the ukulele fan club
on
Twitter.
Well, that's just embarrassing because...
they send this as an example of how not to do it.
So, the music.
Yeah, the music is surprising in the sense that it's not 80s music.
No, there's no 80s music in it at all, is there?
I don't think so.
I don't remember it. Are there any being any obvious kind of... There's certainly no kind of... And, you know, now some Wham! Just as you know it's in the 80s. Or there's not even any kind of more new romantic or...
No or Duran Duran. I was a bit disappointed there was no Duran Duran.
No, yeah, there's nothing at all like that, is there?
No. So Alex Turner from the Arctic Monkeys contributed, I think, 5 songs to the film?
Yeah, because I think Richie Adeoa knows him quite well. He's directed a few Arctic Monkeys videos, and I think he also directed, like, one of their live shows or a video of their live show.
Oh, you know, I think, yeah, he did one of their videos, yeah.
So he's kind of quite close with them, I guess. And
I guess.
That whole media kind of network...
But anyway, the songs are really good, actually. I'm not a massive fan of the Arctic Monkeys, but I really, really liked the Alex Turner songs in this film. I think they're really quite sweet and melodic. And
They certainly fit the feel of the film again. I think we keep coming back to this, don't we, about how each element really fits in with the kind of general feel of the film.
Definitely, yeah. It's kind of a whimsical quality.
Yeah, they have a sort of... Yeah, and there are the songs that are on the tape, aren't they?
I can't remember now. Yeah, on the mixtape.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, there's some of them are anyway.
Yeah, it's good.
And there's.
I contemplated buying the soundtrack.
Really? Well, I can understand that because I suppose the music has a certain.
Yeah. What's out of interest? What music soundtrack album? What film soundtrack albums do you own?
Do I own?
If any.
I own the Boogie Nights soundtrack.
Oh.
For some reason.
Interesting.
There's a couple of good ones on that. I haven't got it anymore. I used to own the Austin Powers soundtrack because I just like the Austin Powers theme tune. And there's a couple of Burt Bacharach songs on there as well.
Oh yeah.
Got the Get Carter soundtrack.
I don't even remember Get Carter having any songs in it.
Get Carter saying yeah. Doom, boom, 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 doom, 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 boom. Oh, yeah, I'll play it to you afterwards. It's great. Really 60s.
I love Get Carter. It's a great film. It's that great line where he tells Britt Eklund, was it, take your bra off.
Yeah. And you used to have the Self-Preservation Society from the Italian Job.
I had that. I used to have a mini. Yeah, I used to have a mini. I used to drive around with that blaring out.
I used to have that blaring out. I can't think of any others. I'm sure there must be.
Mm.
I've got a couple of random songs. I've got a couple of songs from the kids film with splurge guns set in
Bugsy Malone.
I've got a couple of songs from that.
It's quite an eclectic collection there, really.
That's my music.
Wow.
Very eclectic.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, I think that's it. I can't think of any other soundtracks I've got. Yeah. How about you? Oh, I've got like the two obvious ones that everyone our age would have from the 90s.
Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I've got those two. I mean, the government issued those in 1986. Everyone got sent through the post, the Reservoir Dogs.
And Train Spotting.
And Train Spotting. I used to have that. Yeah, I've got that as well. That's a good soundtrack.
That's very
soundtrack.
Good, yeah. That introduced me to Iggy Pop.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's got a couple of good songs that are only on that only on the soundtrack as well.
Yeah, Sing by Blur. And I think Sleeper did one as well.
Yeah,
it was a good soundtrack. Yeah, once I bought I mentioned the Darjeeling Limited, which is a fantastic soundtrack. You must buy it. It's brilliant. Some fantastic Kink songs on there.
Yeah.
And Oh Brother Where Art Thou is another really good one.
Yeah.
Very good songs. And Out of Sight, I bought that recently. That's really good.
Okay.
Really good.
I just realised, I suppose, technically, Hard Day's Night. Yellow Submarine, Help,
yeah.
and Magical Mystery Tour are all film soundtracks.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. A weird case where the soundtrack is more famous than the film.
Yeah, definitely. Especially in the case of Magical Mystery Tour.
Yeah.
And Let It Be's never, I don't know, it's not been, or hasn't been released in years.
Mm. Anyway, speaking of the Beatles' music,
yes,
I believe you have a special treat in store for us.
Well, treat would be a bit too strong.
It's the return of Ian's ukulele challenge. It's been quite a hiatus, hasn't it?
It has. We had a little. There was the touch of the ukulele, a touch of the ukulele in the Valentine's special.
Spoiled it a bit.
Beatles songs are always quite tricky to do on the ukulele. Well, when I say tricky, I mean tricky for me, because I can only ever put, if any song has more than four chords in it, I struggle. And even the relatively simple ones are, yeah, this may come as a bit of a shock to you, Lewis, but the Beatles are actually quite good musicians, and there's lots of chord progressions and changes, and it's quite complex music to actually replicate, especially on an instrument that's not designed to actually play that music.
Yeah. I've got the Beatles Rock Band. I know where you're coming from.
so we both speak from experience. So I wanted to do Yellow Submarine rather than an Alex Turner song, because those are quite hard to do. and I thought, yeah, Yellow Submarine. We used to sing it as a hymn. School,
did you?
Yeah. In my nice secular primary school.
I was cold, I was naked. Yeah, were you there?
We used to do that as well. But I realised even Yellow Submarine is actually quite tricky to do, so I'm just going to do the chorus. In the town where I was born,
lived a man,
and it's known as all his life.
It sounds very similar to Ringo, actually. Submarine.
And so we sailed.
Are we going to do the second verse as well?
Sea of Green!
Submarine!
Ha ha! We all live in the submarine. Yeah, the submarine.
I love this.
Yeah, the submarine. We all live in the submarine. Yeah, the submarine. Yeah, the submarine. And that's it.
I've got to give you a round of applause. That was a virtuoso performance on the ukulele there. It was good. Oh, the struggle you had changing between those two chords.
Yeah, the best, by far the best one we ever did was Je ne regrette rien. that actually sounded like the song. Did I do one for The Godfather? I don't think I did.
No,
I didn't. No, because really I can do the opening bit. Oh, hang on. Kind of.
Oh my god.
See?
It's like Marlon Brando's in the room. Oh my god.
So, yeah. Well, let's put the ukulele away.
Maybe let's just. You know, put it in the other room.
Just in case we get the urge to play it again. So, would you recommend this film, Lewis?
Yeah, I definitely would. It's a great film. I think, as I said, some people might not like it. Might be a bit quirky for some. But if you're a fan of Wes Anderson films, definitely see this.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I also think if you're a fan of... Well, if you've enjoyed Richie Adeo's work in other ways, I think it has. If you're a guy or a gal who likes things like The Mighty Boosh, The IT Crowd, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, even though there's not an out-and-out comparison, I think if you like those sorts of things, you'll probably enjoy this film.
One thing I was really impressed by, considering this is like a first stab at doing a feature film, he's done an amazing job. It's a really professional kind of film, and it's really, really well put together.
I think actually there's been a couple of really good first films recently from kind of British people who've...
Attack the Block.
That's exactly the film I was going to mention. Yeah. I think that's really, really good. And I think both Joe Cornish and Richie Adeo obviously cut their teeth or spent a lot of time really kind of taking on other people's influences and really drawing on them. And when they come to their own first features, just hit the ground running.
Yeah, it's a warm feeling inside to know that you've got these fantastic British directors emerging.
Yeah, definitely.
Really, really good.
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright as well, yeah.
And it is good, you're right.
All fuzzy inside. Fuzzy inside.
Robredon.
Oh dear. Anyway, we should probably wrap it up there. So please keep listening and come and find us on 101films.wordpress.com. We're putting up pictures and things to do with the films. Also, please let us know your recommendations. So
yeah, we've noticed we've had a bit of a jump in subscribers. So we know there's a few more of you out there than there were before. So if you haven't suggested any films, why not suggest some?
Yeah, just
if
please.
If we've seen them, we will let you know.
Please write to 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com. So the criteria basically has to be a film that one or either of us haven't seen.
Yeah, that's it. And as you may have could tell from our Valentine's podcast and several other of our podcasts, there's lots of films I've not seen. A surprising number of films I've not seen.
Seen a lot of slightly odd films.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of slightly odd films, but a lot of films, major films. So you might be thinking, oh, they definitely would have seen that. Good chance I haven't. So I do recommend it if you like it. Or not like it, in fact. If you really hate it but think it's worth watching, do let us know.
Good. And also follow us on Twitter. We're at 101films, all one word.
Yeah, and of course join our Facebook group. And we'll cool. Speak to you soon.
Yeah, see you next week.
Bye. One thing we haven't mentioned, Lewis, is our weekly Zardos update. We should make it a feature.
Zardos was spotted in an unlikely place this week.
Yeah, there's a funny little story about this. I went on a date recently, and of course, as I do on all my dates, I boasted about the podcast because girls love it.
And I'm surprised you mentioned it, really.
Well, it was the third date, so I felt like now's the time to start letting them really know what I'm like. And it was the second date, and she was talking about films, and I was like, oh, well, I do a podcast. And she obviously asked me what films we'd done, and the only one that sprang to mind was Zardos. I couldn't think of any others. I was like, we've done Zardos, I don't know if you've heard of it. And I talked a little about it. Anyway, the next day she just dropped me a text, said, have you seen this list on Time Out from last year, I think, and it was top 10 films to not take on a date, and in there was Zardos.
There we go. We did actually mention that on the podcast, I think. Don't pop this on the DVD player.
I had not seen that list before. So, it's great. Yeah. It's one of those things. Now we've mentioned it once, it's just going to keep cropping up everywhere.
I just keep seeing Zardos everywhere. Anyway, let us know if you spot Zardos in any unusual places.
Yeah, do let us know.